This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It was a big week for cell phones. We celebrated the 40th anniversary of the first cell phone
call. That's right, yeah, we did.
That's right. Do you know the first cell phone cost $4,000 when it went on sale 30 years ago? It took 10 years to develop it. Mm-hmm. That would be $9,400 in today's dollars.
Good grief.
Would you spend $9,400 for a cell phone?
The first cell phone I had was a company phone that belonged to this company, and it weighed about 25 pounds.
Okay, see, that makes iPhones look cheap.
Doesn't it? It does.
It's all in...
Yeah, and it's all relative.
It's all relative, and it had a 35-minute talk time.
Yeah, they didn't last long. And they were huge!
35-minute talk time, and then a 10-hour recharge.
Oh, my gosh. So we've come a long way.
We have come a long way. Then there was so much going on. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit about some development that came out of Stanford. The biological transistor will actually have some transformative effects in terms of what we can do processing-wise in biological systems. Quite interesting. And, of course, this week was April Fool's. And, as always, Google had a whole host of April Fool's jokes online. Mm-hmm. We'll sort of look at a few of the best ones. They've gone overboard with their April Fool's jokes, I think.
Maybe I'm just getting old, but I'm getting sick of April Fool's jokes. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's okay.
Well, theirs are at least funny.
Yeah. Then there's a new Skype. Started circulating a few days ago. It's infecting a couple of thousand people a week, some Skype malware. And what it does, it installs on your machine a Bitcoin miner program.
We were talking about
Bitcoin. I'll explain
what that's all about. Skype a lot. Did you get nailed with this thing?
No, because you have to actually accept a link.
And you're way too smart for that.
Yeah, I don't I don't do that. And, of course, it was a huge mailbag this week.
So huge that you may need to get your own zip code.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, yes. Okay, we got an email from Tung in Ohio. She's a regular listener.
She is a regular listener.
She's a regular listener. Dear Doc and Jim, I want to buy a smartwatch for my boyfriend. I've read about the Pebble Watch for $150, a Kickstarter project, and the Martian Passport Watch for $249. Both connect your Android or iPhone via Bluetooth. Are these watches ready for prime time? Love the show. Tung in Ohio.
This sounds awfully geeky and dorky.
It sounds really geeky. Well, I mean, her boyfriend must kind of be a geeky kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Okay, this actually may be the year of the smartwatch. The Pebble is the leader in this arena. They raised over $10 million with their Kickstarter project. This Kickstarter, when instead of going to a VC, you go to this website and you say, look, why don't you buy one of my products in advance, and then I'll develop it. So they sold the watches in advance.
Wow.
And then using the money that they collected, they then developed the watch. And they actually collected $10 million in this Kickstarter.
Would you ever buy anything before it's been made?
Well, it was. I probably wouldn't. But this is actually this whole Kickstarter deal. This is a way for inventors to go directly to the users and to skip the VC guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's actually kind of an interesting idea. So, people put up $150, and they started shipping the watches in January successfully, by the way.
Well, you're that way, if you're making something, you're not beholden to a third party who
wants a lion's share of of the business. Mm-hmm. So, actually, these Kickstarter projects have been quite successful. And as you would expect, there have also been some scams along the way,
Sure.
So you've got to kind of watch for that. Well, this you can now pre-order your own watch for $150, and they'll ship it within 2 months. Now, Pebble isn't what they call an e-paper watch. It actually is a it's like a liquid crystal display that's very very easy to read in bright sun. It's an e-paper technology. It connects to your iPhone or Android via a Bluetooth connection, and it uses an app on your cell phone. Now, using an app on the cell phone, this phone will display incoming calls. You can use it to control music in your iPhone. You'll receive text messages, Facebook updates. So you just look at your watch, and then you'll see text messages come in your watch or Facebook update, whatever updates you want, and your watch vibrates a little bit.
Oh.
Or if there's an incoming phone call, your watch will vibrate, so you know that the call's coming in. Now, you can't make the phone call through this particular watch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are also some very nice applications, like there's a bike computer, and it uses the GPS in your cell phone, and it displays all this biking data, how far you've gone, how many calories. There's also a jogging assistant. There's a golfing assistant where they actually have in the unit the layout of a lot of golf courses, and it'll tell you which club to use and how far it is from the hole. You just look down at your watch. It's all right.
That's
there.
That's pretty neat.
So it's actually kind of a neat application, and it's very, very stylish. And you can pick any kind of face you want on it. Each time face is a different application. I think it's pretty nice. The battery life is 7 days, and it's $150 if you pre-order it. That's gotten a lot of good reviews, I have to say. Now, the other one that Tung mentioned is Martian Passport Watch. Now it actually is kind of a conventional looking watch, and the top half of the watch is kind of just a conventional watch display, and then the bottom half gives you your text messages. But they made this one so you could actually make phone calls through it. So it's like a Dick Tracy watch in that you could actually answer your phone, and then you could talk into your watch, and then you could hear them, and it's using the cell phone connection.
So is it like a speakerphone?
Yeah, it's kind of like a speakerphone. So you're sitting there talking to your watch, like the old Dick Tracy deal.
We used to think that was such a cool idea.
That's right. And so the thing is, this is $249. It's not really very elegant.
Uh-huh.
I think this is a loser. It's overpriced. It doesn't have very good features. I really can't recommend it.
Uh-huh.
I think the Pebble is going to be a winner. Now, what the Pebble needs are more applications. So they've got a very nice application programming interface for it. They're trying to attract developers there. I think the Pebble is going to end up with a lot of applications that support it. So if you want to buy it this year, it's pretty clear you get the Pebble. That is the winner in the smartwatch arena. Now, of course, everybody's waiting for the iWatch out of Apple, which will link to the cell phone. But they're all basically the same kind of deal. It's just another display for your iPhone.
I'm looking at the Martian Passport watch. Now, the dial, I think, is kind of cool. My problem with it is it's really thick.
It is thick. It's thick. It's clunky. I mean, they basically took just a conventional body, and they tried to make it into a smart watch, and I don't think it was very successful. It hasn't gotten very good reviews.
You know, but I'm looking at the Pebble too, and it's better, but still, it's too looks too long. It almost looks like you're wearing an iPad on your wrist.
I mean, the Pebble iPod is sort of this modernistic look.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
exactly. Right.
So it's sort of like has the Swatch look, if you've seen the
exactly,
Swatch.
Exactly, right. It does.
So it doesn't look like an expensive watch, but the software inside's quite nice, and the display is very nice. I have to admit, I don't like the orange case or the yellow case
They look awfully.
It's kind of swatchy.
Swatchy and junky. Now, you know that you can buy for your I went over to get my iPod.
Uh-huh.
You can buy a band so you can wear your iPod on your wrist. Now, I was at a company meeting, saw this guy wearing this interesting-looking watch. And again, it's a swatchy-looking band,
uh-huh,
but it had, and I think that's a cool-looking watch. I'm showing you, Doc, mine.
That's right.
I'm like, wow, where did he get that? And when I got close, I realized that he had a band that had his iPod just held in it.
Yeah, that's another option.
Yeah, it is another.
Talking about iPods, now that Apple has gone to the iPhone and the iPad, people aren't buying iPods because, why bother? So to turn the iPod technology into kind of a watch technology makes a lot of sense.
It does. My problem with doing that on my iPhone is it just takes up too much space when I start storing audio on it.
Yeah, that's true.
And I probably don't have one with a whole lot of... I probably have this smaller iPhone 4 that doesn't have as much storage on it. But
well, no, you could just how much you wanted to buy. You could get up to 64 gigabytes.
Do you know when I pay for my iPhone after I got finished with the trade-ins?
No.
$38.
$38. So you probably got the sort of the watered down version with 8 gigs or 16 gigs.
I think it's an 8 gig. But you know what? I mean, considering the fact that I even have an iPhone
is a miracle.
Yes, you're right,
without a doubt. Well, now see. If you have to buy it this year, Tom, you're going to get the Pebble. Mm-hmm. I personally would wait till next year because I think we're about ready to see a huge number of these smartwatches coming out in the next year.
It's like buying the first model year of a car, isn't it?
Yeah.
You want to wait for them to get the kinks worked out. And...
But if you just got to buy it now because you got to have something for the birthday, get the Pebble. Mm-hmm. Okay, we got an email from Craig. Dear Tech Talk, I have a home network with 3 computers. The wireless signal's encrypted, but I gave my next-door neighbor my network key so he can wirelessly connect to check his email and do banking, etc. Can they see what I'm doing on my network? And is this safe? Thanks, Craig in Oakton. Well, Craig, I hope you trust your neighbors. They are on your home network. Now, by giving your neighbors the password, you've given them the encryption password so that they can see your signals unencrypted. Now, of course, other people can't see them because they are encrypted. But if you have your computers and you set up file sharing and you don't have, for instance, a password on your file sharing, they can look into all the files on your hard drive. So one thing, if you have file sharing set up, I would certainly put password protection on the file sharing so they can't look at your hard drives. Now, your neighbor may also be able to see the traffic on your network using a sniffer. I mean, that's what I did when, you know, I was having a bandwidth problem, so I ran a sniffer, and I discovered that when my son's computer was upstairs, he was, you know, it was downloading, a gazillion MP3s all in parallel and just totally soaking up all the bandwidth.
I remember that story.
So what I did, I just logged on to my router, and I just... cut off his IP address. off his MAC address.
You're such a mean dad.
It is. He told me, "Don't turn off my computer, Dad." I said, "No problem." But I just cut off his MAC address from the router. Bingo.
Stinks to have a dad that knows more about technology than you.
So
do.
Your neighbor could probably put on a sniffer and he could see what kind of traffic what you've got. I mean, they'd have to want to do that. But probably the biggest problem is many malware infections spread through a local network, and they'll jump from one device to another, and they seek out all the devices on the network, and they'll have a vulnerability that perhaps your computer isn't protected against, and they'll penetrate your computer through that vulnerability, and this frequently is what happens when they spread in the system. So that is probably your biggest risk, that your neighbor is going to have an infected computer. I think the other things require that he has bad intentions, and I think you could...
Hopefully you don't have a neighbor like that.
Now, to protect yourself, you should turn on your firewall on each of your machines. See, your router's a firewall, but there's a software firewall on each machine. Make certain your software firewall is turned on all your machines. And now, a more secure approach would be actually to set up a second router and then share the password for the second router, and then that second router is part of your network, but he can't see your network because you've got another router firewall to go through. And so, you know, many times if people have like if they're sharing, they're renting out their basement and sharing internet access, you're setting up a second router will protect you. Now, sharing your internet connection may be a violation of your terms of agreement with your internet service provider, and chances are it is.
It's kind of like hooking up a second TV to your cable without letting them know, right?
Now, the good news is they can't really discover it because there's no way to detect
sure.
it, but you are probably in violation of your terms of agreement with your ISP. And the final note is, if your neighbor is downloading a bunch of illegal MP3 files and they're going to sue anybody, they're going to sue you because it's going through your IP address.
Right, exactly.
You have the external IP address of Note, and so you are the one who's going to get the legal notice?
It's like when somebody slips and falls on your sidewalk in front of your
house.
That's
right. Mm-hmm. Other than that, there's not a single problem with it.
So go right ahead.
That's right. Okay, we got an email from Jim in Bowie. Dear Dr. Schertz, what is RSS and how do I use it? Thanks, Jim in Bowie.
Great question.
Yeah, well, RSS stands for Really Simple Syndication. RFS goes by additional names that people use colloquially, like a feed, a web feed, or an atom feed. RSS technology is a technology that allows you to get news, articles, web updates, and other content delivered directly to your computer. In order to support RSS, websites themselves must provide what most people call a feed. A feed's nothing more than a specially formatted data file that's updated whenever something new is added to the website. Well, let's talk about the Tech Talk feed. Isn't that convenient?
Well, how convenient is that?
How convenient is that? That's wow. Right. So the Tech Talk podcast feed, the web address is stratford.edu/RSS/TechTalkRadio.xml. Now, this is actually the RSS feed that we use for distributing our podcasts. Now, the file contains XML, which is extensible markup language, which is a formatted document that lists, in our case, the most recent Tech Talk shows. It includes a short outline of the shows, and it includes then a link to the audio file. So every time, so in most cases, when you subscribe to an RSS feed using a special RSS reader, each time a new show is published, your RSS feed is updated, and after a short delay, the new show automatically appears in your reader, so it just automatically distributes to everybody. It's a very nice way for those of you that just want to get Tech Talk, you know, have it there all times. Bingo. Mm-hmm. You know, 24/7.
Because you can't live without us.
You can't live without it. No, and the nice thing is all the shows that are listed on the feed are there. I think my feed's going all the way back to 2007. So in our case, we've also formatted our XML file with specific iTunes-specific tags. And then we registered our feed with iTunes. So then iTunes, after I upload it, within about an hour, iTunes uploads it. So all the Tech Talk shows are available on iTunes. So we can, and we got a lot of people that listen to both iTunes, or you can go use your browser and you can sign up for the podcast that way.
And what the great part about this is, other than the fact that it's Tech Talk,
yes,
it's free.
It's free, absolutely, mm-hmm. It's free. And now, if you have an iTunes account, we'd love you to go in and sign up for that iTunes podcast of Tech Talk Radio, and then give us a 5-star rating.
Do you get a prize for that?
No, I don't get a prize, but I get it. Just moves me up in the iTunes ranking.
It's kind of like having more Twitter followers.
It's like that's right. That's about all it is. We got an email from Kevin in Alexandria. Dear Tech Talk, what is NAT and how does it work on your router? I'm confused. Thanks. Okay, NAT is not the Nationals. That is not the Nationals.
Very good.
The NATs. No, that's not it. It actually stands for Network Address Translation. Which, how appropriate for the nation's capital, NAT.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
So NAT is Network Address Translation. It's actually a very simple concept, and I'm going to have to walk you through this. I don't want to be too complicated, but this is kind of interesting to those of you that are interested in networking.
Sure.
Now, it allows you to share one Internet connection with many computers. You see, the problem is that you're given one IP address to the Internet. And so you've got one address going to the Internet. And if you got three computers, in the old days, you'd have to have three IP addresses. They'd all be directly connected to the computer. But then as we started running out of IP addresses, they said, well, actually, we don't want to give everybody multiple IP addresses. We'll just let you have one. And if you've got three computers at home, you've got to then share that one address with three computers, which means you need to do a network address translation where you go from the internal IP address to the external IP address. So this is how it works. We're using the protocol as TCP/IP, and there are two items that TCP/IP uses when it's routing information around. One is the IP address, which is sort of the street address, and the other one is the port number, which sort of corresponds to the apartment number of an apartment house.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go to a particular apartment, you need to know the street address plus the apartment number in order to get there. And the apartment would be the equivalent of a program that you want to run. So every program inside of your computer has a different apartment number or port address. So when a computer, when a packet comes in, it goes to a particular port number, and we know where it goes. Like port 25 is for, say, email. Mm-hmm. We know that. And so there are standard ports around there. So what happens when your computer sends out on the internet and makes a request to a website, it's making a request to a website IP address and port, goes in there. Normally, if it's a web address, it would be port 80. That's the web address of a web server. And then when it sends that out, it says, now when you send the response, send it back to this IP address and this port number. So it creates some new port number for the return reply. That's really how it works. So what happens with the network address translation device or the router? You actually, each computer is going to send their request to that router. The router is going to transfer the IP address from the internal IP address, which is internal to the network, to the external IP address. It's going to assign a return address port number on it, so it knows that when this particular request is responded to, it can look at that port number and says, oh, that's the conversation going to the computer up in the bedroom, the north bedroom, and so that it shoots it up to that computer, or it shoots it up to the computer down to the basement based on the port number. And so you're basically, it's called network address translation because it translates from an internal address to an external address, and it allows you to operate quite nicely. Now, it has another advantage. When incoming traffic to your router comes in, if it's not tied to a particular port where it's expecting a response, it throws it away. So it turns out to be a fantastic firewall. So that's network address translation, and that allowed us to actually operate with fewer IP addresses, and it allowed us to extend the lifetime of IPv4 a little bit longer.
I don't want things sent to the computer in the basement. That's a dangerous place to send.
Oh yeah, okay.
Things to, yeah.
Well, we can block that. We can go to the router and we can block all traffic to that computer.
You're listening to Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Doc, how can people send you an email?
Oh yeah, we love your email. Send us emails to techtalk@stratford.edu, and also I am monitoring the Tech Talk page on Facebook. That would be facebook.com/Tech Talk Online, and we love your comments during the show.
We will have more of Tech Talk, including profiles in IT, coming up. Stay with us here on Tech Talk Radio.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tysons Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tysons Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to be profiling Marty Cooper. His friends call him Marty.
Just Marty.
Yeah, Marty. His mm-hmm. mom calls him Martin. Martin
Most
Cooper.
Moms do that.
Yeah. Marty Cooper is a pioneer in the wireless communications industry and widely regarded as the father of the cell phone. Marty Cooper was born December 26, 1928 in Chicago, Illinois. the day after Christmas. I'm saying his whole life was probably happy birthday and Merry Christmas.
I know somebody who had to live through that. Imagine being a leap year baby. I know somebody who only had a birthday party for 4 years.
I know. My sister was born December 26th, and, you know, it's happy birthday and Merry Christmas. And so she never did get a birthday
present.
What a rip-off. Everything was like a combo gift, yeah. Now, Cooper graduated from the Illinois Institute of Technology, IIT, in 1950. After graduating, he enlisted in the U.S. Naval Reserves, where he served as a submarine officer during the Korean War. In 1957, Cooper earned a master's degree in electrical engineering from IIT. He left his first job at Teledyne Corporation in Chicago in 1954 and joined Motorola. Kind of a startup operation then, as a senior development engineer in the mobile equipment group. He developed many products, including the first cellular-like portable handheld police radio system produced for the Chicago Police Department in 1967.
No kidding.
What he did there, have you ever seen these police officers? Mm-hmm. They've got this radio sort of on their pocket, clipped to their pocket. Well, that radio is actually going back to the car,
exactly,
which is a base station.
Right.
So he developed that. He developed that technology for the police.
Exactly. It basically uses the car as a repeater for the lower-powered radio that the officer's wearing.
That's exactly.
And they all wear them now.
They all wear them out, mm-hmm, yeah. So thank you, Marty, for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's actually saved lives.
It is, because they can communicate from wherever they are.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 1970s, Cooper headed the Motorola's Communication System Division. In 1973... he conceived the first portable cellular phone. Cooper stated that his vision was inspired by Captain James T. Kirk, who used his communicator on Star Trek.
That's funny. That's really funny.
Let me have a sidebar here.
Sidebar time.
A sidebar.
Okay.
See, in the beginning, they had what they called radio telephones, where you'd have like one big radio tower, and you could go anywhere in the town, and you could sort of talk by radio and make a phone call. Now, the problem is, when you had one giant tower that covered the whole town, you couldn't have very many conversations, because there was a certain amount of capacity that the bandwidth could carry, so maybe the entire town could only have 20 conversations.
Sure.
So what they did, they decided they needed to reuse the spectrum. So they created smaller towers that would only cover a small distance, and that small region that the tower would cover would have 20 conversations, and then they'd have a tower right next to it that would have 20 conversations. Mm-hmm. And the tower next to it was a slightly different frequency, and they divided the frequency band up into 7 different frequencies, and they had these small towers placed around, and the coverage area of each tower was called a cell. So it became cellular radio. That's where the cell phone came from. It was just a way to spatially divide the frequency up.
And that's why now, when you go to a big venue and a lot of people have phones, mm-hmm, why sometimes it's tough to get coverage, right? Because you're back to that original.
You're back
theory.
To the original problem, and mm-hmm, so they have to put cells. When you go into cities or high density areas, the cells have to get closer and closer together, so you have more capacity. So that was kind of the sort of the evolution and the idea of cellular telephone. Okay, let's get back to Marty now. Yeah.
Can I just say one thing? Yeah. We get the radio telephone. My uncle had a ship-to-shore radio, which was basically the same thing.
That's right. Yeah.
And I remember him trying to place a call from the boat, and we would have to wait in queue so mm-hmm that there was for a spot to open up so he could place his call.
Yep.
And
it was the same deal.
Prohibitively expensive.
Now, and the other thing that was significant about his vision, where he basically came up with the idea of a portable cellular phone. See, the competing idea was being developed by AT&T. They were using cellular technology as a car phone.
Hmm.
So in their mind, you've got a phone in the house, you have a phone in the car. They never thought of somebody carrying a phone around with them.
Yeah.
So this was the revolutionary idea. AT&T developed the concept of cellular communication, but they were developing it for this 30-pound unit that went in the trunk of the car.
Sure.
But Marty said, I think we should carry this thing around. And so he conceived of his first portable cell phone in 1973. Top management was very supportive of his idea. And between 73 and 93, they invested $100 million in development before they actually realized any revenues. It ultimately became one of Motorola's top grossing products until they lost out to other vendors.
Sure.
Now, the original handset was called the Dynatac, which that stands for Dynamic Adaptive Total Area Coverage. It weighed 2.5 pounds, was 10 inches long, and it was called, lovingly, the Brick.
Yes.
You remember the Brick. Now, the amazing thing is that Cooper, once he visualized this idea of a portable cell phone, he assembled a design team, and they put together the product, get this, in 90 days. In 90 days.
That's amazing.
So,
now, if you Google that image, mm-hmm. you'll see. I mean, this was what everybody had back then. I remember somebody here as a reporter who had that.
It looked just like the Brick. That's
would
right.
Stick it in his waistband and walk around.
It weighed 2.5 pounds, was 10 inches long. And as I said earlier, it only had 20 minutes of talk time, and then you had a 10-hour recharge. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't actually released until 1983. After four iterations, and when it was finally released and in commercial production, it was sold for $4,000, which is equivalent to $9,400 in today's date. Mm. Now, this is the event that we're commemorating this week. On April 3rd, 1973, after the 90-day development, Cooper made his first handheld cellular telephone call. And he called his chief competitor, Dr. Joel S. Engel, who was head of Bell Labs. And he was standing in downtown New York City. He said, Joel, this is Marty. I'm calling on the first portable cellular phone.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
That's funny.
And Joel wasn't happy to receive that phone
call. I'm sure.
And, of course, Bell Labs was just working really hard on this car-mounted phone, which obviously didn't really go anywhere. Now, Marty also, and the reason he did this, by the way, he wanted to have a dramatic demonstration. He had the press there. So this was a live phone call. They had a press conference. People were there. He dialed the number live. He talked to the AT&T guy. He was on camera when he was doing it. And it really made waves. And mm-hmm. it produced enormous support for the mobile phone movement that Motorola was, because you see Motorola, I mean, they're producing the handset, but you got to have telcos, you got to have companies that actually put up the towers, put up the infrastructure. So that's why there was a 10-year gap between when he made his first phone call in 73 till 83 when it was commercially viable, because you had to have a network to support it. But that was a pretty fast development for a transformative technology. Now, he also led at Motorola the development of a lot of other technologies. The trunked mobile radio, I guess they did work on that. The quartz crystals, quartz crystal oscillators, liquid crystal displays, piezoelectric components, and Motorola AM stereo technology. He ultimately became vice president and corporate director of R&D at Motorola. When he was working on these quartz crystals, he actually fixed a flaw in the quartz crystal used in Motorola radios and encouraged the company to mass produce the first crystals that would be used in wristwatches. In 1986, Cooper co-founded Cellular Payphone, the parent company of Great Call, which was an innovator in a thing called the Jitterbug cell phone that was, you know, quite popular at its time. In 1992, Cooper co-founded Arraycom, the developer of software for smart antenna technologies, which is used for both mobile telephones and long-range wireless. This is actually quite significant. He believes that smart antennas are going to increase the capacity of the network even further, where basically the antenna adaptively responds to users in its field and focuses the energy just on those users by adjusting the phase of the signal, mm-hmm. so you don't waste signal going to places where people are not located.
So it's like having a smart directional antenna.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And that allows you also to more efficiently use the spectrum, because if you're focusing energy down on this guy, you might be able to use that same spectrum if you're focusing to somebody else in another area, because they're spatially separate. So he believes that you can get much more capacity using smart antenna technology. So this is his current passion. Marty Cooper proposed Cooper's Law. Everybody has to have a law, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Cooper's Law states that wireless channel capacity doubles every 30 months. Now, that's because of improved signal processing, mm-hmm. like with smart antennas and other things like that. And you can sort of see it, sort of the evolution from 2G to 3G to 4G, how we're getting more and more throughput on these systems. So the channel capacity is doubling every 30 months because of increased spectral efficiency. When Cooper joined Motorola, let's talk about the money.
Yeah.
When Cooper joined Motorola, he signed an agreement for all of his inventions. And this agreement said that they would belong to Motorola. He was paid $1 to make that agreement legal.
He's not
legal.
The sharpest businessman ever now, is he?
No, but I saw him actually interviewed. Somebody asked him about that. He says, well, actually, he got enormous satisfaction over developing the cell phone, and he said Motorola did take care of him.
So, well, that's good.
So he actually felt that quite happy with that agreement, and he went on to develop other things. You know, many years ago, I had Marty as a guest on the show. He was, like, visiting locally.
I had him as a guest on the show,
and he's quite a humble guy and very interesting to talk to. It's sort of like all these guys that are writing, these innovators. They do it for the love of the technology and not for love of money, and mm-hmm. that was the way he came across.
He sounds like he'd be fascinating to talk to. That would be great. I mean, if that ever opportunity ever happened again, it'd be great to have him on the show.
Yeah, that's right. So there we go. That's all you want to know about Marty Cooper, the father of the cell phone.
So we talk so often about stuff on Tech Talk that's breakthrough, groundbreaking technology. Like, you know, for instance, the CD, which is now on its way out. Do you ever see anything replacing the cell phone?
Replacing the cell phone, I mean, it could be that these Google Glass,
mm-hmm.
where you end up don't actually carrying a cell phone. I think there's going to be sort of ubiquitous cell phone connectivity, but I think the idea of carrying something like we carry is probably going to go away.
Really?
Like what Google is doing with a heads-up display.
Huh? Okay.
So you just got something like a pair of glasses. A call comes in, or a text message comes in, you just see it
on your glasses.
You just see it projected out in front of you. So as you're walking along, you just see a projection of any text messages. And if you want to answer the call, you just touch your glasses and answer the call. So you actually don't carry a cell phone.
So then again, we're talking about the watch. The watch could be that same sort of an appliance, right?
The watch could be that way. I think we're going to something which is wearable.
Gotcha.
Which is wearable instead of something you got to put in your pocket.
Interesting.
I think that's the evolution of this whole thing.
You learn so much by listening to this show, if you're paying attention. Speaking of which, if you're paying attention, you will be rewarded, or at least one listener will be rewarded for that knowledge here shortly when we play the pop quiz on Tech Talk Radio, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. More of Tech Talk coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now,
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the classroom of the airwaves.
You always say that with such gusto as you're trying to make a point to me.
I know. Even though this is a radio station, for 1 hour every week, we turn this studio into a classroom.
We do.
We've got a projector over there. We've got a whiteboard, and it's a very, very serious academic
classroom. I want to know where the lunchroom is.
That's right. Now, of course, if there is a class, and if there's a classroom, and if there's any kind of instruction, there's always going to have to be some type of assessment. And so we're going to have a pop quiz. If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you will get an A for today. Plus, you will win 2 tickets to fine dine at the Escapier Dining Room or the Karem Dining Room. All you have to do is figure out the right answer to the pop quiz.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the show, I was talking about Marty Cooper, of course, the father of the cell phone. What was the nickname of the first cell phone that he released in 1983 while he's working at Motorola?
Now, you could actually use a cell phone to get us the correct answer, but the best way, again, is to call us on any sort of a phone. If you're calling from west of Chicago, Illinois, it's 877-936-9333. From east of the Rockies, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line is 877-936-9333.
Now, for those of you in the International Space Station, you can reach us by Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded directly to the studio, free of charge.
Would that really work from the international?
Yeah, they've got an internet connection.
No kidding.
There'd be no problem at all. In fact, they're probably listening to Tech Talk right now, streaming live over the internet.
They very well could be.
Because they don't want to lose out on any of the latest technology that's going on.
They're probably well behind that because they're up there. There's no technology happening in space right now.
No, not at all. That's nothing, you know. And is time going slower or faster for them? I think they're...
That's a very good question.
I think I'll have to... Let me think about that.
Wow. We are almost... This is taking us back to the conversation about the space elevator.
Yes.
And string theory.
I actually think things are slowing down for them. So if they come back, we'll be older. The people on Earth will actually be older than the people orbiting the Earth in the International Space Station. So,
Doc,
there you go.
You know what? Why don't we just do this? Why don't we go? Because we already have somebody on the line. Let us go to line number one. This is Jim calling from Bowie, Maryland. Jim, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk. How are you, sir? Jim, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hi, Jim. Welcome to Tech Talk. Earlier in the show, I was talking to Marty about Marty Cooper. Could you give me the nickname of the first cell phone that he released in 1983?
Ibrick.
That is correct. You're going to win 2 tickets to fine dining in the Escapier Dining Room.
Louis, I'm sorry, I didn't recognize your voice. Thank you for calling, Louis, and thanks for listening to Tech Talk. Stand by. Andrew Mitchell, our adjunct professor for prize distribution, will be right with you. Doc, why don't we talk about something now, since we did things a little bit out of order there. Oops, let's go. Let's put Louis on hold there. Thanks, Louis.
Let's talk about the Google April Fool's jokes while we're talking about it here.
Yes.
So now Google had a lot of fun with April Fool's jokes. Probably one of the most interesting ones was what they did on YouTube. They said YouTube is now shutting down.
Oh, this is great, yes.
They said, you know, for 10 years we've been collecting videos. and now the contest for the best video in the world is going to close tonight. Tonight at midnight on April Fool's Day, we're going to shut down the site and we're going to start evaluating all the videos that have been submitted to find out the best video in the world. They have 30,000 people to evaluate the videos. They said it's going to take 10 years to do the full evaluation. So they expect that in 2023, the site will reopen with only the winning video available.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
So that's the... Then the second thing that they did for April Fool's jokes, they have the Google Nose.
Mm-hmm.
You heard about that?
Yes.
Now, the idea that they were touting was the Google Nose. Now, this search feature allows users to actually search for smells in the Google Aroma Base, which includes 15 million centibytes of smells. The page describing the Google notes as some links related to services like AdSense for businesses and scratch and sniff books. Then they had the Google Maps treasure hunt. Now, the Google team announced on its official blog that Google's map has a treasure mode where users can explore for treasure, looking for William Kidd's treasure. Actually, it seems functional, and you can actually look around. Maybe there is actually some treasure hidden in that. Then on Google Analytics, they said people that have Google Analytics, the team actually, if you look at the people that have looked at your website and you look at the location section of Google Analytics, you'll notice that you received visits from the International Space Station. That's why the International Space Station was on my mind today.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had Google Photos plus Emotion. Software engineer located a Google Plus put on Google Plus that Google social network will allow users to have emoticons to express feelings in the pictures they upload. So they can upload pictures, and a new icon will appear for every person in the picture, and it will generate an emoticon based on some kind of image processing, which is kind of interesting to look. Now, the funniest thing I thought were the Google fiber poles. Now, they said they've released Google Fiber Optic in Kansas City, and they said the problem is everybody's sitting at their home on this high bandwidth connection, and people aren't communicating anymore. So they set up Google Fiber poles, or they got a connection on telephone poles to connect to the Google Fiber, and they have groups of people sitting out in the community hooked up to the pole, so they're bringing people together.
So you actually have to go out to the pole and hook up.
And you hook up to the pole, and they actually had videos of people camping out at the pole, setting up tents, camping out at the poles, having their fiber connected. And one woman came up, she says, I haven't seen my husband for 3 weeks. He just sits at this Google poll all the time connected to the internet. Of course, that's just all a joke. But they actually had all this news reporting on it. It was a lot of fun to look. So Google spends a lot of time on their April Fool's
jokes. That's like the Google phone booth then.
That's right.
My favorite April Fool's joke that I saw just happened to on Twitter. Richard Branson tweeted out something that Virgin was coming out with the first glass bottom jumbo jet. And they actually had a couple of pictures of what it would look like to be inside. Imagine how freaky it would be to be walking through the center aisle of an airplane and you would look down and see the Earth 30,000 feet below.
Yeah.
But then the other photo was a photo of an actual jumbo jet, and they'd photoshopped it. So there's this long glass panel that ran the length of the of the airliner, and you could see the reflection of the trees and what a stupid idea, right?
Yeah, that was really quite interesting.
Let's take a break, Doc.
Okay.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Also online at techtalkonline.com and on federalnewsradio.com. More of Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Saudi Arabia might ban Skype in WhatsApp and Viber. Now, if you remember back in 2010, the government of Saudi Arabia threatened to institute a ban against BlackBerry services for not complying with surveillance rules. BlackBerry was forced to work very hard to avoid being banned in Saudi Arabia. Officials in Saudi Arabia are now threatening to ban some major voiceover IP applications. The reason for the new ban being considered has to do with Skype, WhatsApp, and Viber. These are voiceover IP applications that do not comply with the rules within Saudi Arabia that allow for monitoring of phone calls. In other words, the Saudis want to have the encryption key so they can eavesdrop. Now, while Saudi Arabia and the Communications and Information Technology Commission has said that it will take appropriate action regarding these applications, it hasn't said specifically what conditions the applications are failing to meet. But we can all guess what that is. Reports have indicated that the problem with the Saudi government has is that it's unable to monitor communications using these apps. CNN reported that threats likely stem from the fact that last week there were political protests that were organized using WhatsApp. This sort of political demonstration is against law in Saudi Arabia. When the government of Saudi Arabia took offense to the communications using the BlackBerry network, the problem was with the encryption used for monitoring the communications channel. They said the inability to monitor the channel meant that it could threaten national security. So at this time, all three apps are continuing to work, but we don't know how long that's going to last.
Gotcha.
The H-1B cap has been reached. The Immigration Service, USCIS, no longer is accepting petitions. The H-1B visa petition filing was reached April 5th, 2013. In just 5 days, USCIS said it received more than enough petitions to fulfill the statutory cap of 65,000 H-1B petitions and 20,000 H-1B advanced degree exemption petitions, since employers are allowed to file the paperwork on April 1st. So they started on April 1st, and the caps were filled by April 5th. Last year, the cap was reached in 10 weeks. So this year, it was reached in 5 days.
Wow.
So that indicates something relating to an employment demand for these particular type of employees. It took that long because of a sluggish economy back then. And while the cap was reached in lightning speed this year, it still doesn't compare with the one-day record in 2008, where it was filled in 1 day. Well, that would be hard to get in on that. Now that the cap's been reached, UCICS will use computer-generated random selection process, known as a lottery, to choose from all those submitted on the first day. You see, they actually got more than 65,000, so they have to like pare that down using some kind of randomized lottery. The lottery date hasn't been selected yet because of the overwhelming number of petitions. This year, these 2014 H-1B petitions will then be given to the State Department, which has the final say on issuing visas, because then they'll look at security issues and other issues. Last year, the State Department approved a total of 135,000 H-1B visas, which included both the 85,000 of the combined cap as well as the uncapped H-1B visas issued to nonprofit and government research centers.
Doc, you have so much content today. Let's just stay here until the end of the show. You got so much stuff to talk about.
We'll just stay on here. There's a new Skype malware that uses the victim machines to mine bitcoins. This new piece of malware is propagating across Skype, and it's been discovered. It was discovered last week whenever the recipients click on a link. Which I'm saying, you really shouldn't click on any link you get through Skype. Unless, Now, this particular thread is different in that it drops a Bitcoin miner application to make the malware author money. While malware is spread on Skype and mine, while malware has been spreading on Skype in the past using many things, and there's also been Bitcoin miners before, they've never put the two together. The security firm Kaspersky discovered the threat, which it named Trojan Win32 Jorik IRC bot, and it was discovered on April 4th, 2013. At this time, most of the potential victims are from Italy, Russia, Poland, Costa Rica, Spain, Germany, and Ukraine, with an average click rate hitting at 2,000 clicks per hour.
Yikes.
Yeah. Now, the initial Trojan is downloaded from a server located in India.
Mm-hmm.
pretty sneaky.
Mm-hmm.
Once the machine is infected, the Trojan drops multiple other pieces of malware using Hotfile to grab the bits, and also is connecting to a server in Germany for further instructions. Now, Bitcoin, I talked about this last week. It's a decentralized currency. And how they create value, each Bitcoin is a very complicated digital signature, and it's very complicated to come up with these signatures. And so they have Bitcoin miners, and people just search around for these things using brute force computation. When they find one, they're rewarded with the value. It's sort of like mining for silver or mining for gold. And so the central authority, sort of kind of a bidding process, determines how much you get paid for mining a Bitcoin sequence. And so they've got all these, so they would basically use your machine to do the Bitcoin mining, and then they collect the commission on it.
Now, the term brute force computation, what exactly does that mean?
It means that, like if there are 100,000 possible combinations, you guess all 100,000.
Oh, wow.
Instead of just using some sort of logic to try to just guess a few, you just crank it out, brute force. And so in this case, the major threat is that the Trojan maxes out your computer CPU doing this very complicated calculation. So to avoid the threats, simply don't click on random links that you receive on Skype.
There you go.
Let's look at some tech trends in mobile. I mean, there are sea changes going on in with mobile. First of all, the rise of the mobile platform. People are now buying iPads, mobile phones. They're buying fewer computers. So the winners in this... the company that makes, that licenses the chips that go in the cell phone, ARM. ARM has 96% of the market for cell phone processors. And ARM is, it's interesting, they actually license the technology there. They don't make anything, they license it out. And they have dominated the marketplace because they have developed some very powerful, high efficiency, low power consumption chips. And they basically have just beat out Intel and the other chip makers to speed. And the other people, big winners, of course, in this whole mobile thing, like Apple and Samsung, they're just taken off because they've focused on the mobile platform. Now, who are the big losers? Intel. Intel hardly has any of the mobile chip. So Intel PCs are dropping down, so Intel sort of missed the bandwagon. Microsoft, it's all desktop stuff, and they've made very, very poor penetration into the mobile market. So Microsoft has lost out. Look at Dell Computer. Dell Computers is tanking because they were all PCs. AMD is also another chip maker that's more into PCs. So the old what they called the Wintel, the Windows and Intel combo that was driving everything before, is now passé, and we've now got the mobile platform. And so there's a huge shift going on. Many players are going to fall, and many other players are going to rise.
Interesting. We're just out of about,
oh, my goodness.
About, 30 seconds or so left.
Yeah. Listen, we love all of your emails. So email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We also like you to listen to the podcast. So you can go to iTunes, Apple iTunes, and you can look for Stratford Tech Talk, and you can sign up for that podcast. Give us a 5-star rating. We'd love that. Or you can go to techtalkonline.com, and you can download the podcast from there. And, of course, we want you to go to stratford.edu, take a look at all the programs that Stratford has, and make certain to tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk.
And, of course, you can hear us again on Tech Talk this time next week, 9 o'clock on Saturday morning on Federal News Radio. See you then.
Paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. and federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening this week. This is Federal News Radio. Coming up, lots of sports. The Nats take on the Reds. Hopefully, they'll be better than they did last night. Coverage starts at 12:30. We also have the Wizards later on at 6:45 here on Federal News Radio. Sunny today, close to 60. It's 42 now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility.